Zayas Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of the Zayas Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Greetings, saints, and welcome to the Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour. We're broadcasting live from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is February 14, 2019. The world is in turmoil. Most of us do not realize that, but we are in that time at the end. And that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin, the world, and look to the holy city. Hear the sound of the shofar. Heed the warning. Get right now before it's too late. Please, folks, make this choice for Yeshua tonight. If you need help after the program, call me. I'll pray for you or with you. If you get the machine, please leave your name, number, prayer request, and or message. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682. And an emergency, my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. Now, folks, you can always find updates with the breaking news in the Wichita Mission Church radio program archives, contact information, all at our ministry hub, which is very simply prophecyhour.com. Remember, we are a national satellite radio program, which is simulcast live on the net internationally. It's on YouTube live and some FM stations. So pray about supporting airtime. All this isn't free. I know a lot of you think, well, radio is free, but it is not free. And so we do need your help to stay on the air because this ministry sells nothing. On another note, I want to thank our listener base that is worldwide in places like Colombia, Turin, Italy. Now, that's, remember the name Turin, Italy, because there may be something according to this program tonight about Turin. And anyway, Kingston, Jamaica, and all over Australia, of course, cities in the United States such as Plano, Texas, Tampa, Florida, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and Wichita, Kansas still remains the largest group of listeners to our radio programs when they go to podcasts later on tonight. And you folks out there in Wichita, I pray that you would start supporting the Wichita Mission Church, because while I have the most group of listeners there, I get the less donations or input from Wichita. Seems kind of amazing. Please follow us and share us at Twitter at Pastor Dan Catlin at Branch77. Now prayer, and we'll bring on tonight's guest. Your Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, I pray. Father, I pray that radio tonight goes according to your will and not our will, Father. And please give us all ears and to hear the truth and understand the truth. Lift the veil from their eyes, Father. So please, Father Yahweh, and your Son, Yeshua HaMashiach's mighty name, bless this program tonight. Amen and amen. Well, you know, no talk about political stuff tonight and no controversies back and forth, although some people say there's a controversy over this subject. I actually really enjoy this subject. Tonight we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects. How many times have I said subjects? A bunch here, huh? Anyway, tonight we're going to have insight brought to us about the Shroud of Turin. And anyway, so tonight, who was going to talk about it? Well, tonight we bring back on with us Professor Tom Mack, retired. He's the principal owner at White College, Publishing Company. And he lives in Trinidad, Colorado. Now, folks, before I go on with this thing, just remember, I'm recovering from being in bed with flu for a couple of days, so bear with me. But anyway, Tom is a certified A-plus certified computer technician, a net certified network technician, as well as a book designer, a web designer, and webmaster. In the past, he has even been given an airport, been an airport administrator. He's an IT manager and controller, who would want that job? I love you, Tom, but who would want that job? That you would have to have nerves of steel. Anyway, we should also mention at one time he was also a tax specialist. Tom has also did research with Bible codes, and this is what first got my attention with him in the first place. He's did research with Bible codes since 1996. That's over 20 years plus of code research. This kind of background is what we needed with our talk radio host tonight. So welcome, Tom Mack. Are you there with me, brother?
Yes, I am there, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you on. You know, brother, I didn't know if I was going to be able to get out of bed today. I was still in bed at 2:30 this afternoon moaning and groaning because I've had the flu for a couple of days. After I got up, I felt better. But so if I seem a little slow in any responses tonight, bear with me.
I understand that. In fact, there's some stuff you need to get. I don't know if you can, but a lady sent me some while back that she said, you take this the first chance you get with the flu and you will not have problems.
Really?
And it's called Best Flu Relief. It's a homeopathic medicine. And you can get it in Walmart.
Really?
It is a little pricey.
Okay, do this for me, and I'll put it out to the guests because, you know, there's a lot of people like me. I don't take that, I ain't taking that stupid flu shot, you know what I mean, the vaccine or whatever. And I, what has got me through it is I drink colloidal silver, and it works pretty good. It breaks it in back, but, you know, it's still like anything. You got to do it for a couple of days. But do, after the program, when you got time, send me the name of that, and I will look it up. I'll get some at Walmart for sure. But anyway, Tom,
yeah, I will.
Go ahead.
I'll get that to you after the program, and the other thing, colloidal silver works too. After I went in the hospital and had MRSA, I started taking colloidal silver and another thing called B propolis.
I never heard of that.
It's gone.
Really?
And they can't understand why.
Will you send me the name of that second one, too? But, you know, I've been using, I rose my family with colloidal silver. And, you know, especially in a day of, where antibiotics are, at least I hope doctors that you folks have out there are making it a little harder for you to get them because there's been such a great misuse of antibiotics to where we're about don't have antibiotics. But colloidal silver really, really does work. And, you know, in fact, my son just went to the doctor for his flu a couple of days ago. And he told the doctor what he was using. And my doctor, which I love the guy to death, he advised him to keep drinking and using colloidal silver. And that's unusual from a regular medical doctor. Back to you.
Okay. And, yeah, another thing, too, sometimes you have to put it up your nose so you can get the blockages nailed.
Right. Right.
And
right. Absolutely. Well,
no, I should explain, I'm not a medical doctor. In fact, I'm terrible in that field.
Oh, yeah.
But
hey,
tonight
we're going to
dive into it a little bit.
Yeah, we'll just call all that entertainment, because if you don't, they can say the federal government, if they wanted to. And for some reason, I got a whole bunch of listeners in Washington, D.C., which really drives me crazy. But moving on from that. You know, we call it entertainment, folks, because we aren't medical doctors. But I really want to get into this subject. You know, the Shroud of Turin, man, that has been one of my favorite subjects. I don't know, as long as I can remember. How about that?
Yeah. And I would suggest to people that are interested, probably still the best book on the subject is The Blood and the Shroud by Ian Wilson.
The Blood.
He's also written a couple other books on it, but this one goes into the most detail and gives you the most history. And
cool.
He goes through a lot of the issues.
I'll really look that up. In fact, you sent me some links to some YouTube videos, and for the folks' information, they're on my regular Prophecy Hour page, but it's also, if you go to the pastor's page, because I produce so many articles that are breaking news. If you go to the pastor's page, they're right there on top, and there's three good videos. I think it was three, yeah, three good videos on that you are for. I sent what you sent me. And like I say, that's another one of them. I'm not completely back yet, but I do know they're up on that page. Back to you.
Yeah, I saw them there.
Okay, well, go ahead.
You can go there. You can pull them down. One of them's about an hour, or a couple of them are an hour long, so be prepared for that. The others are, the other two, it's about 30 minutes long. And this is really up-to-date research done by a guy named Dr. William Guy, and he's really, really up on it and has the latest research. I'm not going to necessarily touch the latest research, so I'll refer to it from time to time. Basically, what we need to do first before we can understand is what the heck is the Shroud of Turin?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Antiquity
says it was...
A lot of people don't know.
Yeah. Antiquity says that it was the cloth that was wrapped around Yeshua after he died. That's why there's so many blood stains on it. But there's also some other stains on it that nobody paid much attention to until the late 70s. We'll get into that later. But what happened? After the resurrection of Christ, this cloth was taken to Edessa. Turns out there was a king there. His name is Abgas V. And apparently he had been in correspondence with Yeshua. He had heard about Yeshua, but being a king, he couldn't get away to go hear him. So he wrote him, and apparently Yeshua wrote back. And somewhere in that city could very well be that correspondence, the only written words by Yeshua. Could you imagine that? If you could ever find that document. And I'll tell you something. I think there's two guys who might know where it is. I sent
you a
thing about that a while back.
Right, right. You know, and I want to say this, folks, and I want to say this to you, Tom. Look, if you run out of time for this, I will immediately schedule you, I think, for the week after next to do a second part of this if need be, because really this is an important subject because, folks, this is one of the things, like the Ark of the Covenant that was found by Ron White and different things, this is one of the things that I believe that the Father left us so that we have an absolute witness in these end times that Yeshua is, was, and continues to be absolutely real. Back to you, Tom. Sorry for the interruption.
That's okay. Now, speaking of evidence, when we see the two witnesses, and you can read about them in Revelation 11 and in Zechariah 4, they're not just going to have their words as testimony. They are going to have documentary evidence of the death and resurrection of Christ. And the thing I've come to learn the last few years is when these guys speak, it's going to fly in the face of what's being sold as the gospel of Christ, that people are going to consider them heretics. And I would caution you, don't discount somebody because they're teaching something that you haven't read before or haven't heard before. I think these guys are going to shock a lot of people. And I will say on this, most of the material, or at least a lot of material I'm going to talk about later, you can get from me. Just send me an email at tom@whitestonefoundation.org, and I will send you one of Olaf Hagee's reports on this.
Okay.
And he calls it the Saga of Eve's Canopy. And everybody's saying, wait a minute, what's Eve's canopy got to do with the shroud? We'll find out. But the thing we got to do is track this thing. What happened? We know that the apostle Thaddeus, you know, he's mentioned twice in the Bible. But after the resurrection, he takes the shroud to King Abgas the Fifth, knowing that Abgas the Fifth needs it or would take proper care of it. I think they wanted to get it away from Jerusalem because they knew things were going rather badly there, and they couldn't expect whether it'd get any better. So they take it to somebody who's not hostile. By the way, the technical term is a Sidarian. That's what the shroud is called. It's called the Sidarian. Well, it was taken to Edessa, and like the healing clausen that Paul used, this was used to heal the king of an incurable disease. We don't know what disease it was, but once it cured him, almost the entire population became Christians because of that miraculous healing. And it stayed in Edessa for a long time. It's a city in northern Turkey. Even in Edessa, things got bad. In AD 57, the old king dies, and King Manu comes to the throne, Manu the Sixth. What does he do? He reverts to paganism, and he starts killing Christians right and left. But they got smart, and they hid the shroud before the king could get it. And so it remained hidden in Edessa until the year 502 A.D., when it was found after a flood. Edessa's on a river, and it's known for its floods. And nobody ever quite thought maybe they could dam the river and control it, but they didn't. And so about every 50 years they have a bad flood, and they still do. And, well, it gets discovered, and by that point in time, the Roman emperors are more favorable towards Christianity, so they preserve it, they put it in the church there, and it stays there. But in 544 A.D., the Persians decide they're going to take Edessa, and the people finally bring out the shroud and use it, I guess, as a prayer cloth of sorts and pray for the siege to be broken. And sure enough, it was. But by 639, Edessa does fall to the Muslims. But it's interesting because Edessa went peaceably. I guess they paid attention to Jeremiah, who, you know, told the Israelites, just capitulate to Nebuchadnezzar. Don't fight him, and things will go better. Well, they didn't listen, and things went badly for them. But in this case, these people listened, and they came up with an agreement so that they could still be Christians in a Muslim world. And so it pretty much stayed there until 943. And in 943, they did move it to Constantinople, back into their eastern control of the Eastern Roman Empire. And they put it in a church there. And suddenly people find out about this shroud, and they start making pilgrimages to Constantinople, which is still safe, and we have a record of Count Henry of Champagne going to Constantinople to visit, and it was a state visit, to visit Emperor Emmanuel Comnenus. And he started adding something to it. He started writing a lot of these Holy Grail stories. And in case some of you don't know, Percival was a famous knight in King Arthur's court. In fact, he was the number two knight behind Lancelot in King Arthur's court. And he went on a quest to receive or to obtain the Holy Grail so that his friend, the Fisher King, could be healed. Now, who on earth is the Fisher King? Remember, Yeshua told the disciples that they would be fishers of men? That's
right.
Interesting.
Amen. So we're going to break in. Hey, we're going to break in because we're going to go to break in a couple minutes, and I just want to say, well, not even a couple minutes, about a minute and a half. First, I just want to say to the people doing, people that might not understand, folks, if you've just tuned in a little bit late, we're talking about the Shroud of Turin, which is, the shroud is the burial shroud. This would be the cloth that Yeshua was wrapped in after his crucifixion when he was placed in the grave. So this is what we're talking about now, and Professor Tom Mack, retired, is giving us an overview of this and with some historical precedents. Tom, now where can they find your website? You got about 30, 45 seconds to tell them about where your website's at and all that, please.
Okay, go to whitestonefoundation.org, whitestonefoundation.org. And if you want this report on the Shroud of Turin, just write me at tom@whitestonefoundation.org. And I'll send you a copy. It'll be a PDF copy. And
well, folks, that's great. If you go to prophecyhour.com, go to the pastor's page, you're going to find some things from Tom Mack. But also, wherever you listen to this program later tonight when it goes to podcast, as most of you listen that way. Well, I don't know how many listen live, but anyway, point is, you podcast users, there will be a link wherever this podcast thing is located at, Radio Archives, and we'll be back in 3 minutes, I'm told.
Pastor Dan will be right back.
I've got a story to tell. Jesus spoke to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, "The scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All, therefore, whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. But do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers." When one sat down to read the scriptures in the synagogue that was referred to as sitting in Moses' seat, Jesus said to observe what was presented from Scripture, but not to follow after the teachings of men, for they had added their own rules and regulations. He called them hypocrites, saying that they shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. The fact that Jesus did come against the teachings of the Pharisees has been misinterpreted by many to mean that the observance of the Sabbath no longer applies to believers. A careful study, however, reveals that he came not against the commandment, but rather against hundreds of interpretive teachings which made it impossible to keep. Yes, the scribes and Pharisees who falsely accused Jesus of breaking the fourth commandment had perverted the true intent of the law to the extent that he called them serpents and vipers
and said that even though they appeared righteous unto men, that within they were full of hypocrisy and iniquity. Nowhere in the Bible is the fourth commandment made void. It is a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable, until heaven and earth pass away. I'm Richard Reeves with Just the Facts. For more information, contact Partakers Publications, Post Office Box 23031, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227, or visit our website at www.toolong.com.
If you'll give an ear to these words I sing, compassion for the lost will grow strong. As I fix my eyes on humanity, watching as they run to and fro, a burden fills my heart and the time is short. They're soon to lose their souls and they don't know. They cannot see the road that they're on. It's broad and it entices them with pleasures, and further down that road they are drawn. And as I fix my eyes on humanity, watching as they run to and fro, a burden fills my heart and the time is short. They're soon to lose their soul. Snatch a soul from entering hell. But don't you know these evil days are numbered? So get to work and do your job well. And as I fix my eyes on humanity, watching as they run to and fro, a burden fills my heart and the time is short. They're soon to lose their soul. That was on my heart. Now don't forget we haven't much time. The vineyard's ripe, the field is wide, the workers are few, and the harvest time is now in its prime. As I fix my eyes on humanity, watching as they run to and fro, a burden fills my heart and the time is short.
We're back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin. You're listening to Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour on the American Voice Radio Network, of course. We're coming to you live from the Flint Hills. And today, we're talking with Tom Mack about the Shroud of Turim, which is a really interesting subject. We'll get right back to it. But, excuse me, let's point out a couple of things. You know, a lot of people don't know how to help. And so let's say this with the Wichita Mission Church. For a gift of $100, you can say sponsor a meal, and that will give a meal for over up to over 70 people at the Wichita Mission Church. and that would be a main staple meal like spaghetti or stroganoff or something like that with a side dish on it and a dessert. You could do all that for $100, but that's it. But if you add it in, now that's just for the food process, folks. We're not talking about paper and things, but if you'd like to just sponsor that, you make a donation of $100 and say sponsor a day or sponsor a meal, that would be wonderfully great. Next thing we're moving on to is two. This is very serious. You people that are out there listening to radio, we ask that you would support radio for two reasons. We need support of airtime. We've been paying very late for airtime every month, but also, we've been messing around with some video things over here and getting the office straightened around, but we need equipment upgrade very badly, starting with our board. We really, really, really need that. We're trying to raise $1,000 goal for that. So if you want to donate to radio and to upgrade this office, and this isn't luxury, this is upgrading the computers and my board, which is really going out and gets staticky. Point is, we need an upgrade. So pray about supporting radio and making a donation for radio tonight, if you can do it. Doesn't mean you have to be the $1,000, but you can upgrade. You can help us upgrade. So any kind of donation will help. And $100 buys a meal for up to 70 people or more if need be at the Wichita Mission Church. So pray about it. Just a normal donation that comes in, just pray about it. If it's for radio, make sure you say it's for radio. You can donate online, over the telephone, or by mailing a check or money order. You can find all that information at prophecyhour.com. Now remember, we do have to support radio airtime, which is satellite, which is FM, which is podcasts, and all these things. We just for the radio air. Okay, most people think this is just a podcast. It's not a podcast. When you hear it on a podcast, that's because it's a radio archive that you folks just started calling them podcasts. Point is, we're actually paying for satellite radio airtime. We have to get that paid every month. Anyway, if you don't wish to help us for, consider a donation for radio airtime. I've talked them up enough. So just pray about supporting Wichita Mission Church. As my wife says, they need what you need, and just pray about it and let the Father lead you. And now we are back with Todd Mack talking about the Shroud of Turin, which is one of my very favorite subjects. Are you there with me, Tom?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. All right. Well, you can pick it up where you left off, but before I do that, you know, this there's been it seems like there's been a conspiracy of trying to discredit the Shroud, because, you know, and a lot of folks would point out that, well, sometimes they have said that it's absolutely authentic, and then at other times when you have a group coming in trying to carbon date, which I don't believe in at all, and saying that it's wrong. I mean, you know, so who is actually, and it's a question that's arose, who's actually in charge of the Shroud? Who has it? Who has control over it? Back to you.
Okay. To answer one question, who actually owns the Shroud of Turin? The Italian government technically owns it, because the Italian government sort of inherited it from the House of Savoy when the Italian people voted to have a Republican government in 1946. Rather than have a king, Umberto II of Savoy, rule over them. And they didn't have much luck with kings. They had King Victor Emmanuel II before Mussolini took over, and he wasn't that good. That's why people didn't object too much when Mussolini and his fascist party took over. But to get there, and even to get to the House of Savoy, is quite a trip, because we stopped at 1147 when Count Henry of Champagne visited Constantinople. They gave him a full tour of the Shroud and of the other relics of the city, which maybe wasn't such a smart thing. So he writes Grail stories or starts writing them. A lot of other people jumped into that, including Wagner, who wrote Parsifal, which is Percival in English. But Sir Percival went on a quest to obtain the Holy Grail and use that to heal the Fisher King. And then after he finished his quest, after 7 years, he went back to his beloved, a woman who waited for him 7 years, not knowing if he would ever come back. Because in those days, travel was not as certain as it is now. So give that woman a lot of credit for waiting 7 years, because he takes off at about age 15, comes back at age 22. In olden times, a girl at age 22 is considered unmarriable. She's just too old. And even in Jewish culture, back in biblical times and thereafter, marriages were arrangements between families.
Right.
You often knew who your wife was going to be when you were 13, 14 years old, when your parents started talking to you about this after you went through your bar mitzvah. And you might show up at her 15th, 16th birthday with flowers and be the only guy there. And every one of those girls knows why you're there. And you're probably scared half to death. I'm not quite sure how to behave. I don't care how many times you've talked to your mother or your sister. You don't know. And so these Grail stories started going around. And we would have a couple more visits. Until 1202. Shortly therefore, previous to 1202, the Muslims again retook Jerusalem. And that did not sit well in the Vatican. And so Pope Innocent III, I don't know how innocent he was, sorry for the bad pun, but he declared a fourth crusade. And people from Germany, from France, from Italy came to Venice to go on this crusade. Well, they got to Venice, and after a couple of years, they were going nowhere. They hadn't even gotten to Constantinople, which is supposed to be the jumping off place for taking the Holy Land. And sadly, some of my ancestors were part of that. And they, after about 2 years of living there and not getting paid, they went to the first place they could go where they could make a lot of money. And that was Constantinople. Not a major trip from Italy. So they go down there, and after a year, they breach the city once and still didn't get paid. Venice was a financial land of vipers. So they were good at making promises. They weren't real good at keeping them. And finally,
I'm sorry, I had to laugh at that. That's par for the course historically, and it just hit me as funny. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. On the 12th of April, 1204, the Crusaders broke down the walls of Constantinople, and they helped themselves to all the relics, including the Shroud of Turin. And by 1225, Otho de la Roche takes possession of it, and he becomes a preceptor in the Knights Templar. As you might guess, that isn't a good group to be connected with. And so he takes it back to France. Finally, the last Byzantine emperor, Baldwin II, makes a list of relics, of which the shroud is on that list, and they take it, or he cedes that list of relics to King Louis IX of France. And it isn't much later till Geoffrey de Charnay takes possession of the shroud, and it's kept in a church in Lyrie, France. And this guy makes a money, it makes a lot of money taking the shroud around and showing it for people and charging admission. And Catholic Church wasn't too happy about it. In fact, the bishop stepped in and stopped the exhibitions and claimed it was fake. But something changed his mind. But it stayed. It went to Troyes, France, which is not too far away. And it stays in Troyes, France, and even the King of France demands it be brought to Paris. The dean of the church there said, no, it's staying right here. And there was a little bit of an argument, and it stays there until 1453, when the Savoy family, which was the royal family of Italy, they gained control of the shroud. It's not quite certain how they did, but they got it. And they took it to Sainte-Chapelle in Chambéry. And there it sat for 30 years until 1532, when a major fire broke out in the church. And they had put the shroud in a silver box, which is great, sort of secure. It had four locks, and the keys to these four locks were given to four separate individuals. So when this fire breaks out and it gets really, really hot, in fact, so hot, it actually starts to melt the silver. In fact, some of the burn marks you see on the Shroud of Turin today are from that fire. But eventually they got a locksmith in there. He broke the locks, and they saved the shroud by dousing it in water. And it takes them 2 years to argue about how to repair it, but finally they turn it over to the poor Clare nuns in France, and they do the repairs. And this piece of history seemed to be lost to the 1988 group that evaluated the Shroud of Turin. Because guess where they took their sample from? They took it from the piece that the poor Clare nuns actually fixed. And so guess what? They come up with a Middle Age date on a piece of cloth that existed only in the Middle Ages, because that's where the nuns sewed pieces on to fix the Shroud of Turin. Now, these days, people would be aghast that someone would do that. But back in those days, they wanted it to look as good as they could. So right. They sewed in patches where the burn holes were. Sort of makes things a little difficult. For example, doing DNA testing on the shroud would be useless because of all the people that have handled the shroud since the first century. And the idea that it was painted that the image of Christ was painted on there by Leonardo da Vinci. That's sort of an interesting choice of people for a lot of reasons, but the trouble was he didn't have the technology to paint on linen like that, and he wouldn't. And but they look at this and they find out rather quickly this was imprinted in the cloth, but only one layer down. You could literally take that image off with not a lot of work. And in fact, if you look at the image, you have to do photo enhancing to even really see the image on the true cloth. But back to the history. The fire breaks out. Everybody for 2 years, they argue over how to fix it. Finally, they turn it over to the Poor Clare nuns, and they patch it. And finally, in, what is it, 1578, the shroud finally goes to its final resting place in Turin, Italy. Still owned by the House of Savoy, which technically, if title were to be argued, the House of Savoy still owns it. And, but they, you know, they took this shroud.
Right.
And they moved it to Turin. And in another, what I consider astounding move, they, in 1868, Princess Chatilde of Savoy actually sewed a crimson taffeta as a backing on the shroud to try to preserve it. Again, everybody who's expert in preservation of old garments would be horrified. But that's what happened. After that, it goes back into the vault. And they don't bring it out but about every, what, 10 to 15 years. And
Tom, not to interrupt, but a question that has arose, you know, has people are saying, you know, some people say there's been blood tests done on it. Other people say there has or hasn't. Any consistency on this so I can satisfy our listeners?
Okay. When it comes to blood tests, there have been blood tests done on it. But because, one, there's so many people that have touched this shroud, it's hard to come up with a consistent test. And actually, the thing that's most interesting is they found fibers and pollens that only could come from the Middle East.
Right. And
so that sort of throws out any kind of a theory that it could have been created in the Middle Ages.
Right.
But, you
yeah,
know, there's still people that are never going to believe, no matter how much evidence you put in front of them.
Well, you know, I've heard they did some, I know it's a, with different but kind of the same subject, you know, they did some blood tests on the Ark of the Covenant, Ark of the Covenant blood that was found on the mercy seat by Ron Wyatt and them. And, you know, some people speculated that there's been a comparison on both. I don't know if you've heard this or not.
It would be,
if you're not, it's okay. We're going to do, you know, because we don't have, folks, we don't have a lot of time left in this program. But I'm going to let him finish up. We are going to schedule another program for this because this is one of my subjects, and I want the rest of it, you know, the rest of the story. Anyway, back to you. Sorry I didn't let you answer. We got about 4 minutes.
Okay, well, it would be really hard to make a blood test comparison because the blood off the Ark of the Covenant would be pure, whereas actually I would think that probably the there's another cloth that they might be able to check on. It's called the Sudarium of Oviedo. It's in Spain. And it was also another cloth that was put on Yeshua after he died. And there's 120 points of correspondence between this cloth and the Shroud of Turin. So pretty, you could take that into any courtroom in the world and make it say that it came from the same place.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting. I had not heard about those other two cloths, and so is it safe to say then we've got a lot more of the story, don't we?
Oh, there's a lot of things to this story, and we haven't even gotten to the... I was hoping to talk about it in the second half, but we'll have to talk about it next week. And, you know, here's the thing. If you want to get a jump on it, you know, email me. And I will...
All right.
I will send it to you.
Okay, and we... And, folks, that's what we are going to do now. I think I'm going to look at my schedule. I'm pretty sure we can do next week at 5 o'clock central, but I am going to look it up, and we'll schedule at least two program. I'll send you 2 dates just as soon as this program gets over, and I can look at my calendar, because I got to do that first, make sure I don't have anybody else booked. You know what I'm saying? Normally I am up on all this, but I've been in bed for 2 days, and, you know, I'm not working at 100% at all. But I'll let you finish out however you want. We got a couple of minutes left.
Okay. Well, the interesting thing is after Italy took over the Shroud, they sort of worked things out, and they tried to coordinate things with the Vatican. And in 1988... they tried to do a study on it, but the study was flawed because, one, they only took one piece sample of the cloth. And guess where they took that sample from? The place where the Poor Clare nuns had sewed on it. So, of course, it's going to date to the Middle Ages. And and I'm no expert on this, but if I were going to do a study on it, I'd want 5 or 6 different areas of the Shroud. So if I did make a mistake and grab it from one area, I wouldn't have my results skewed like they were.
Right.
And it's also rather interesting that shortly after this after they filed their report, one of them gets a big chair at Oxford University. One of the three scientists who reported
on
it gets a big chair at Oxford University worth millions.
Yeah, and
let me say this,
and folks, listen to what he just said. Think about this. These ungodly people that in no way want to prove that Yeshua is real simply are the ones running these tests. Now, you think, folks, that they would absolutely do this in an unbiased opinion? If you think that, I think I have some swampland over here in Kansas I'm willing to sell you. So you can contact me after the program. Back to you. You need to tell them where you're coming from and everything, how to find you. And I'm going to have to let you go, Tom. But I'll send you those dates right after the program.
Okay, sounds good. And you can write for Olaf's report. And if you want to get on Olaf's mailing list, just send me an email at tom@whitestonefoundation.org. And I'll put you on the mailing list. I'll send you a PDF. And if you want a hard copy of it, you'll have to get in touch with me some way and ask me about it. And we'll work out a way. It's going to have to cost a little bit because I can't do these things for free, and mailing's getting ridiculous.
Well, absolutely. And, and that's funny, and I only got a couple seconds to cover it, and then I'll say goodbye. But I've heard so many people gripe over the ages, because I'm involved with ministries that sell DVDs, and they say, oh, they're charging for the gospel. They're charging for the gospel. Okay, well, who's going to pay for it? Not all of us are independently rich. Okay, anyway, I love you, brother. I got to say goodbye and shalom. I got to get out of here.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we bless Tom. Well, folks, that's Tom Mack, and he will be back. We're going to talk about this more. But remember, folks, there is only one God. He is your Father. He is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His Son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repentant sins, and he rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. I point this out because only through him is the way to the Father, and this was his test for you. That's what it was. It was the only test given. Remember, always, always, always be a blessing to others. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. That's planned for Yeshua's return. Pray about supporting the Wichita Mission Church and radio. Lord our God, Father King Universe, asking Yeshua HaMashiach's name, that Father, you would bless and keep them, and that your face would shine upon them, and that you would please be gracious to them and give them peace like no one or nothing else can. Until an hour from now, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time from Messiah's Branch.